Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, April 14th, 2019. This is episode 1583. I am out on vacation in Hawaii. Fortunately, the fabulous Rich DeMuro from KTLA, you might remember him from CNET some years back, is filling in. Enjoy the show. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by PryLock Security. Teach your employees how to keep your company secure by avoiding phishing emails, candy drops, social engineering. Show them how and why hackers attack with training from PryLock. Go to PryLock.com/TWiT and use the promo code Leo to save 30%. And by Peak PTT, the leading provider of push-to-talk systems for business communications. For instant, always-on, nationwide communications, visit peakptt.com and use the promo code TWIT for 15% off.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the Tech Guy Radio Show. I'm Rich DeMuro, filling in today for Leo Laporte. Happy to be here. This is the show where we talk about technology and take your phone calls. If you have a tech question, an issue, or you're trying to make a gadget decision, I'm here to help. My name is Rich DeMuro. I'm the tech reporter for KTLA Channel 5 in Los Angeles. Very honored to be filling in today for the one and only Leo Laporte. My website is richontech.tv if you want to learn a little bit more about me. But I love technology. I love to talk about technology, and that's why I'm here. So this is one of the reasons why I love technology. So woke up this morning, just like any other day. I go to my phone and I look at the apps, right? And so one of the things I love to do as a tech nerd is to update my apps. Because what does that mean? Well, updating your apps means that there are new features potentially hidden inside those updates, right? Little things that you couldn't do before. And this is what's so unique about our phones, is that they are just a slab of glass and metal with not even that many buttons anymore these days. But they do so many different things. And the difference between today's phones and the phones of yesterday is that today's phones become new and unique things all the time, almost on a daily basis. So I know a lot of people don't like to do their software updates because they're worried that it's going to break some sort of functionality on their device, right? You know how to use this thing. You finally got to a place where you understand where things are. And next thing you know, Apple or Google or Samsung gives you a big software update and everything's changed. All the icons look different. All the settings are different. And you get really frustrated. Same thing happens on your computer, right? Whether you have Windows or a Mac. And so a lot of people don't like to do these updates. And I understand that. But you kind of have to, because inside the updates, not only are they doing things that are new and different, they're also putting a lot of security features in there, right? Security updates that you need. So you might remember a couple months back that whole FaceTime issue with the iPhone. Well, how did they fix it? Well, they immediately disabled it on the server, but then they put out a software update that fixed it for real. And so these are the kind of things that are happening inside these updates. Now, those are big, giant, you know, operating system updates. But what I really like are the app updates. And this happened this morning. There was literally a feature that I wanted on this app that I've been using. It's YouTube Music. And there was no compatibility for CarPlay. And what that means is in your car, you can use the functionality of your iPhone on your dashboard screen, right? Some of you probably are familiar with that. Well, the YouTube Music app did not have that functionality. And I'm driving up here to the studio and I'm wishing it did, right? Because it would have been nice. All of a sudden, I wake up this morning and what arrives on my phone? But an update for YouTube Music. And it says, hey, we've added CarPlay support. It's like the Google gods were listening to me in my wants and needs for this app. And suddenly it's delivered. The functionality of that app changed overnight and added something that I really wanted. And that's what I love about apps. Because if you need to do something on your phone, suddenly you can. Now, I wrote a book called 101 Handy Tech Tips for the iPhone. This is all about the stuff that you can do with the features that are built into the iPhone, right? Very popular. It's on Amazon. A lot of people love it. But my idea with that book was to tell people about the functionality and all the stuff that you can do without downloading a single app, right? Whether you wanted to scan a document or, you know, change your ringtone or, you know, whatever it was, have your phone announce your callers by name. All that stuff is in the book. That was the idea. It's like, hey, look at how many things your iPhone can do without downloading a single app. And Apple's been really good about that. But downloading apps, of course we all do that, right? If there's almost anything you can think of that you want to do on your phone, you can download an app. And I know that catchphrase. There's an app for that, but I'm not going to use that. But there is, and that's why they use that phrase for so long. So I thought it'd be fun to kind of go through some of the apps that I really like, starting with this one. It's called Everlance. This one keeps track of your mileage and expenses. And I do, you know, I have a regular job, but I also do some things on the side. And this has been amazing because it's like Tinder. Not that I use Tinder. Never have, but I know what it's all about. You swipe left and you swipe right. And that's what Everlance does. So if you're an Uber, if you're driving Uber on the side, if you're delivering stuff on the side, if you're making music on the side, whatever you're doing that gets you side income, this is amazing because it tracks your mileage, so all the miles you go in your car, and all the expenses that you have. So if you buy things, you connect your credit card and your bank account, or you can do it manually. But you just swipe. If you see something, okay, I spent $50 at the photocopy place. Oh, yeah, that was work-related. Let me swipe that right. I spent $5 at Starbucks. That was not work-related. Let me swipe that left. That's amazing. Google Assistant. This is built into Android phones, but did you know that you can download it for the iPhone as well? And you'll be so surprised when you do this how many things that Google can answer for you, especially if you use Gmail. It knows a lot of stuff. Ask it, hey, when's my next flight? When's my next hotel reservation? How much is this? What is that? How do you say this in this language? Play some music. It'll do all that stuff. And my favorite is Google Duplex, which you can ask Google Assistant to make you a reservation at a restaurant. And it will do that as well, whether it's on OpenTable or not. YouTube Music, this is what I was talking about. This is the app that I really like for music right now. This has an uncanny ability to predict the music that you want to listen to. And I love the search functionality because you can search for a song, even if you only know a few words of the lyrics. And think about it. YouTube is probably the number one place for music online. So Google has all that data from what people are doing on YouTube to help figure out what you might want to listen to in the car. And my favorite feature is the offline mixtape. This basically downloads from 20 to however many songs you want on your phone at all times across all genres that you like. So it reminds me of making those mix cassettes back in the day. Headspace is one of my favorites. This is a great app if you need to take some time for yourself, right? We hear about this mindfulness all the time. It doesn't have to be some crazy thing, you know? It can just be kind of fun and just a little bit of time for yourself, right? So my favorite on Headspace is this thing called Everyday Headspace. And this is just a short audio clip every single day that just talks about kind of a topic and helps you kind of relax, and you choose the time you have, anywhere from 3 to 20 minutes, and it will fit that daily, everyday headspace into that time. This is a really good one, Aptive. So I love this app. I've talked about it on KTLA, but this is like having a personal trainer in your ear. So I was really skeptical at this app because I was like, come on, how can this be good when you're working out with no one? You know, usually workout apps have people, you know, where you see them on the video and you can mimic what they're doing. This one's all in your ears. And so it's amazing. I've just been loving this app in the gym, and they have music as well. So you pick your workout, you pick how long you have to do that workout. You pick if you're beginner, intermediate, or advanced, and you start working out. You can do it for running, for the weights, whatever you want. I love that app. Dashlane, if you're not using one of these password managers, I really like Dashlane as well. You know about password managers. You have to have one. Just pick one and use it. I don't really care which one you use, but just use one. Firefox Focus. This is an app that's it's a web browser, but it's private. So anything you do inside this browser, when you're done, you just hit the trash can icon and boom, it's all gone. So you can use this for sensitive information, like if you want to look up something like, you know, theoretically, let's say you feel like you have some sort of medical thing and you don't want Google to know, right? So just look it up in Firefox Focus, press the trash can when you're done, and you're done. Now, being someone who has looked up stuff on the internet about what you have, right, when it comes to medical, it's the worst thing you can do, right? You talk to any doctor and they say, yeah, everyone comes in here self-diagnosing themselves from Google and they all think they're going to die. So just beware. Come on. I mean, if you're looking up stuff on Google, you have to understand nothing replaces a professional. Another app I like is called Meteor. This is probably my favorite internet speed test app. And it's really fun. You even pick the apps that you like a lot. And it will show you how your internet connection will perform for those apps. So if you download a lot of music through an app, or if you upload a lot of stuff to Facebook, this app will show you, hey, this is going to be a good connection. This is going to be a bad connection. And Scannable is my favorite way to scan paper into PDFs. Super simple app. Just hold it on top of a piece of paper. And next thing you know, it will scan that paper into a PDF. Super easy. Super fun, and it's totally free. That one's only on iOS, so if you're on Android, just use Google Drive to do that. And if you have photos you want to scan, the app I like for that is called PhotoScan, and this is from Google. This is a fast and reliable way to convert old photos into digital photos, and Google, of course, is using a little AI to make your photos look their best, even when you take pictures of them. The list goes on and on. I've got it all on my website, richontech.tv. Just a few of my favorite apps. Later in today's show, we're going to have our car guy, our photo guy. I'll talk about tech. But up next are your questions. Phone lines are open at 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Give me a call if you want to talk about tech. You're listening to The Tech Guy. This is the person you'll talk to if you call in. Heather, what's going on?
Loving a Sunday in Petaluma.
Yeah, isn't it beautiful up here?
Yeah, and it's nice to meet you too. Although there's that one stretch of freeway that's kind of smells.
Oh, I don't mind that. I don't mind it.
Really?
I love it. I mean, how often do you get to be on the open road in your car?
I guess it smells better than LA.
Windows down. Hey. Oh, LA smells good.
You like LA?
Well, I wake up at like 3 a.m., so it always smells really good when I wake up.
It's fresher than
fresh.
It hasn't gotten all filled with people and smog.
Yeah, but it's not smoggy. You got to come down. It's beautiful.
Some friends there. Okay, deal.
Especially after all the rain we've had. Everything's been cleansed.
That's true. I'm excited for summer in California this season.
Yes, and it's beautiful. I mean, the drive up here was just amazing. I mean, the wildflowers everywhere. Everything is some sort of color, whether it's green or bright or whatever. It's amazing.
The California poppy.
Yeah.
We're having a super bloom.
Super bloom for a super duper summer coming up.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Heather, I give out the number, 888-ASK-LEO. When they call, they talk to you first.
Mm-hmm.
And what are you looking for in a good caller?
That's a trade secret. I'm not at liberty to
divulge that.
Yes. Not
all
on
right.
there.
Well, you found a couple of them. So who are we going to start with today?
Yeah, they're both smartphone questions. I kind of like Constance because I want a blur feature on my phone. You know, we took a picture earlier and I'm like, all right, stand back. Don't show all my lines.
Oh, okay. I think I know what you're talking about here. All right, let's get to Constance in Huntington Beach. Constance, you're on with Rich on The Tech Guy. How you doing?
I'm fantastic, and thank you. It's a beautiful day in Surf City, USA.
Yeah.
And
Hi.
So, yeah, so my Samsung phone has this wonderful feature on the camera, which is a no blur feature, which I love to use because I love taking pictures of the grandchildren going down the slide or people dancing in motion, and you get a great picture without the blur. Well, the last update destroyed my blur feature.
Well, I'm confused because I'm not sure what the blur feature is. So explain to me where you found this and how you turned it on in your phone and what changed. So was it a software update that changed it?
It was a software. It was the last update from Samsung that changed it, which changed everything else as well, right?
Yeah, they call it One UI now. So it's One UI is basically Android 9, and it just basically made its way to most of the Samsung or a majority of the Samsung devices now.
Yeah, well, one of the reasons I bought the S8 Plus was for the no blur feature on the camera.
And where do you find this feature? So where are you finding this feature? Inside the settings?
No, I never even had to find it. All I had to do was take a picture. It was just there. It was just a part of the camera.
Okay. And so if you're taking a picture of sort of like action or something, it would stop it and freeze it like at a good point instead of it being blurry.
Exactly, and you get these wonderful, great pictures, especially of children, you know?
Yeah, because that's this. It's funny you say this, because when I test phones, and I test basically every phone that has ever come out in the history of mankind, one of the big things that I really have a problem with a lot of these phone reviewers is 99% of them are taking pictures of inanimate objects, right? Flowers, mountains, cars, their beer at a restaurant, right? And guess what?
Right.
Every picture, every camera in America can take a great picture of a flower, right? Now,
exactly.
You put two little kids in a room, and I guarantee you 9 out of 10 pictures are going to be blurry 90% of the time. Because guess what kids do when you ask them to take a picture? What do they do, Constance?
They run around.
Exactly.
They move, they wiggle, they squiggle, right?
Exactly. So getting a good picture with kids is really tough. And so I agree. I think that I found that the Samsung does a good job of this. I found that the iPhone actually does a really good job of stopping. I call it stopping the frame, because it's basically like, I do this all the time. I put two cameras next to each other. I have my kid stand there, and I literally have my kid jump up and down. And I just start holding down the button on the camera to take a whole bunch of pictures, and I swipe through them side by side, and I say to my kids, okay, which one do you think looks better? And the worst is the picture of your kid with like the whole face blurred out, right? Because they moved, and it's like, ooh, that's a scary looking picture.
Exactly.
So I think that, so you're saying your pictures don't look as good anymore, huh?
No, I cannot take a picture without it being blurry now. I do this a lot. I mean, I really love that feature. For example, there we had a family event in the park, and we had bubbles and bounce houses and balloons. And I got the most beautiful series of non-blurry pictures of children running with the balloons and the bubbles. And it's just like they're award-winning photos, right?
Yeah.
Well, because there was no blur.
Well, I think that a couple things to do. Number one, There's a feature that you can use called tracking. There's two things you can do. The first is you can take your finger and hold it down over like the kid on the screen, and it should kind of lock in on that child and keep them in focus. Okay. Now there isn't, I know you didn't have to do that before, right? Because that's annoying to do. You don't want to have to do that. The second is a feature in the settings called tracking autofocus. Have you tried that one?
Well, I have my camera up right now while we're speaking. So I have food pictures, there's panorama. These were not there before.
Right.
Pro, selective photo, selective focus photo, video, slow motion, hyperlapse. And that's the choices I have now.
Well, okay. So inside, if you look up in the upper right-hand corner of your screen under Bixby Vision, there should be a little settings icon. And inside that settings icon, there is a feature under useful features. It's called tracking autofocus. And if you turn that on, that should help kind of identify the kid in the picture. The other new thing is the shot suggestions and the scene optimizer. So what Samsung is trying to do is make it easier to take pictures and kind of not have you have to go through all these settings to come up with a good picture. So the cameras are getting smarter than the users, and they're trying to outsmart us, hopefully doing everything on its own. More of your questions after this at 8888 Ask Leo. Coming up next, we're going to talk to our car guy on The Tech Guy. I don't know if you heard me doing the earlier thing, but I'm not kidding. So I'm driving up here, and this is what I love about like the phones, how they evolve. I'm driving up here, and I'm using YouTube Music because I've really been into it lately. Have you tried it?
I've played around with it a little bit. I haven't used it much in the car yet.
It's phenomenal.
They just recently added Android Auto support.
They didn't what? They didn't what? Sorry.
They just recently added the Android Auto.
Yeah,
I haven't really used it much. I mostly use Google Play Music.
Yeah, okay. Well, if you like Google Play, this is like it takes it to the next level, because it's all they're slowly but surely adding in Google Play features to this thing. Now it's, I think it's almost complete, because now they just did CarPlay today. So anyway, long story short, I'm driving up here and there was no CarPlay support. And I'm like, I love this app, but I can't use it because it doesn't work with CarPlay. This morning I wake up, no joke, I check my apps and there it is. It says CarPlay support has been added. And I'm not kidding. I went ahead and deleted Google Play Music on my phone because I don't need it anymore. And I moved Apple Music all the way to the back, because the only reason I use that is for my Apple Watch. And that's it. And Spotify, I still pay for, because I have like 10 people on my account. Sorry, everyone listening, but I, you know, You're going to be cut off one of these days. One of these days, you'll be cut off.
Yeah, you got to like it when you get those surprise updates.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't it great? Sam Abulsamid, our electric car guy. Sam, welcome to the show.
Hey, Rich. Glad to be back again.
Sam, I love that you're on the show because I was telling the listeners earlier about how I was so excited that our phones change so often that I got this feature I wanted for CarPlay today just overnight. I mean, I didn't have it on Friday and now I have it. And now my YouTube Music works with CarPlay. And I'm just a lover of CarPlay and Android Auto. I love the fact that those things interface so nicely with the cars. And I think the car makers are taking that pretty seriously, huh?
Yeah, they are. They're certainly working on updating their interfaces, their stock factory interfaces, to try to make them better, make them a little bit more like the smartphone projection systems like CarPlay and Android Auto, and you know, trying to make them easier to use. You know, over the last 10 years, as we started to get these big screens in cars, a lot of the interfaces were not really well designed. You know, car makers weren't used to designing that kind of mobile interface like for phones, and so we ended up with a lot of very cluttered displays and a lot of really small touch targets and things like that. So they're definitely getting better at it. But still, I think, you know, CarPlay and Android Auto are definitely better than pretty much any of the factory systems.
But it's a tug of war, too, isn't it? Because these manufacturers, of course, want their own operating systems on our dashboard because they can sell different parts of them. And, you know, they can monetize some of that, you know, especially with the connected cars. But just handing it all over to Android and Apple has got to be tough for them, too.
Yeah, with so much data being generated in cars today, you know, car makers are looking at the dashboard, looking at the infotainment system as a way to get new revenue streams. You know, so they're doing things like for usage-based insurance systems, you can, for some automakers now, you can opt in to, you know, instead of having a little dongle that you'd get from your insurance company to get a discount when they monitor your driving patterns, you can now do it directly from the connectivity system in your car. And opt in. GM does that. Hyundai offers that with their system, and so it makes it a lot easier. And when that happens, usually the car maker will get a little slice of the insurance premiums, kind of an affiliate fee, like you get if you set up an Amazon affiliate account, they'll get some money back from the insurance companies or other third party providers.
And I thought this was fascinating. Driving up here in my own car, of course, my check engine light comes on, right? Like, that's just Murphy's Law. But here's the best part. The check engine light came on. I got an email from OnStar saying, hey, here's why your check engine light went on. Can you bring your car in? I thought that was pretty brilliant.
Yeah, that's one of the coolest features of these connectivity systems, is that they can do remote diagnostics, and sometimes they can, in some cases, they can even do predictive diagnostics. So one of the things the car makers will do is collect telemetry data as you drive, and so they'll gather certain signals from the sensors in your car, and then when things fail, they'll build that into a model and try to predict. Try to find the characteristics that indicate, you know, when something like your battery is going to go bad and needs to be replaced.
Oh, you mean before you go to start up your car before work and it just doesn't work and you're like, oh, no, not right now.
Yeah, exactly. And then they can send you a message and say, hey, you know, the signals we're getting off your car indicate that you're probably going to need a new battery in the next couple of months. And would you like to set up an appointment at a dealer or, you know, some other service provider to come in and have your battery replaced, you know, before you get stranded somewhere?
I love these ideas. But here's the problem. As a consumer, I'm very skeptical because I'm thinking, okay, there's an opportunity to sell me something here. And these car makers, like you said, you know, they get a cut. Obviously, they want to push me into the dealership. So I think that that's kind of the skepticism of a consumer. You have to remain skeptical, but it's a fine line, right? Because you want to trust what your car is telling you. And of course, I want to bring my car and it said bring it in within the next 7 days, right? So it's like I want to trust that, but I'm also like, well, maybe it's going to go away. Because previous times, you know, like with the gas cap opener, these little tiny sensors that they have now, it just goes away on its own. You're like, oh, cool, I didn't have to bring it in.
Yeah, so you know, that's why they're being careful about how they roll out these kinds of features and trying to focus more on, you know, the things that are actually likely to be real problems, things that might get you stranded, as opposed to, you know, if your gas cap's not screwed on all the way, you know, they're not going to worry about those kinds of problems. But the things that might get you stranded somewhere, those are the ones they want to emphasize.
So you brought an interesting topic to the show today, rental cars and plugging in your phone. And this is something that I always think about. I'm like, I just imagine every every time I plug in my phone, it's just literally tapping all the data and like sending it off somewhere. Is that happening?
It's not necessarily sending it off somewhere, but it can be saving it in the car itself. So this came up a couple of weeks ago. There was a story that came out. A security researcher went out to a scrapyard, found some wrecked Teslas, and bought the computers out of these wrecked cars and took them back to the lab and started poking around in there and found a whole bunch of unencrypted data in there, people's phone books. One of the things that Teslas can do, you know, with the cameras that are built in is they can operate as a dash cam. And so it can record the data, you know, record what's going on in front of the car. And in this case, you know, since these were cars that had been in accidents, there was video of what happened leading up to the crash. So there's all kinds of data that can be on there. And even, you know, even with other cars today, every new car today has got Bluetooth in there. And, you know, in a lot of places like California, you're not supposed to use your phone. You're not supposed to hold your phone and use it while you're driving. You're supposed to use, you know, a wireless connection or wired connection. And whenever you connect via Bluetooth to your car, you know, when you connect a new phone, the first thing it asks you is, do you want to give, you know, on the phone is, do you want to give permission to download your contacts and download your messages? And of course, if you do that, it's got to be going somewhere and it's going into the computer. It's getting stored in the computer in your car. And it does that so that it can, when you want to use hands-free calling, it can search that much more quickly than it uses the voice.
It kind of digitizes. It looks through all your contacts. It comes up with a digital fingerprint for all the names. And then when you say the name, it kind of recognizes that.
Right.
Back in the day, you had to like, you know, come up with the name. You'd have to like record the name into like, you know, this is for number one. You'd say the name a couple times. Nowadays, you don't have to do that.
But if you happen to rent a car and do that and you connect your phone via Bluetooth, one of the things you need to remember to do before you return the car is go through, disconnect your phone, delete it, and delete all the contacts and any messages and anything that might have been downloaded into the car, because otherwise the next person that rents the car is they'll be able to see all of that information still. So you have to be careful about what data you actually share with the car, even if it's your own car. If you get into a crash and the car goes off to the shop or goes off to a wrecking yard, probably if you can, you know, it might not always be the case. In some cases, it might be damaged enough that you can't actually go in and erase anything. But if you have the opportunity to do that, you probably should go in and delete your phone, delete all your contacts and your messages and any calendar information, anything else that might be on there before somebody else has access to that vehicle.
All right. Good advice. Good advice, Sam. Where can folks get a hold of you?
You can find what I do for my day job as a principal analyst at Navigant Research at NavigantResearch.com. We do market research on clean energy technologies, including transportation, which is my area. You can find me on Forbes and at the Wheel Bearings podcast at wheelbearings.media.
All right. Sam Abulsamid, the car guy at Navigant Research. Thanks so much for joining me on The Tech Guy today. Some great advice and very timely. My little brother rented a car a couple weeks ago, and he called me kind of freaking out that he had left his phone paired to the car. And I was like, I know it's frustrating and it feels like a privacy invasion, right? You just imagine this next person getting into the car and just looking at all your stuff. My favorite thing when I get a rental car is just to look into that list of all the people. It's kind of a graveyard of all the people that have rented the car before you. So good advice there. You're listening to The Tech Guy. I'm Rich DeMuro, filling in today for Leo Laporte. We've got questions from cities across the U.S. Why not have yours in as well? Give me a call, 8888-ASK-LEO. 8888-ASK-LEO. Your questions up next. Everyone's talking Game of Thrones, huh? Oh, you guys want to know why the check engine light went on? Emissions. I don't know what that means. It just said for emissions. So it's not like anything, I don't think, bad. I just think that I just thought that was really cool because I was like, oh no, check engine light. And then I checked my email and there it was. So I thought that was great. Let's see what it says. Advanced diagnostic alert. Please bring your car within 7 days. There's an issue with the emission system. And Jerry is in Woodland Hills, California. Jerry, welcome to The Tech Guy.
Hi. So my old computer is like a little out of date, and I need to get a new one. And I was thinking about the Apple Mac Mini. And I read a couple articles on the Internet, and I couldn't figure out whether it was right for me or not. I do some video editing just for the internet, not for movie theaters or anything, and I do a little sound recording. So I was just wondering if you had any opinion on the, because I knew they upgraded it, they changed it a couple times, and so it just made me curious whether, you know, if they finished, I mean, is it okay, or is it a goodbye, or what?
Okay, so Mac Mini is the small computer that Apple offers, and yes, it did recently get a refresh, and so they did bump up the specs. A lot of people thought that this thing was dead. It was kind of done. So it depends what you're editing. If you're telling me you're editing for the web, I think that pretty much any computer these days can do that. I mean, I edit videos on my phone for the web, and it's just fine. Now, it depends kind of like how intense. Like if you're talking 4K video, which, you know, is pretty common these days, I think it's going to handle it. I think the main thing you need to do with this Mac Mini is you need to get the best specs you can possibly get. So I'm talking the best processor that they offer. Also, the best processor, the best amount of memory that you can find, the best amount of storage. If you look at the specs that it comes with, the prices they're talking about, it's not very good. You're talking $800 or $1,100. And if you get those off-the-shelf specs, your machine is not going to last that long if you're trying to edit with it. You want a machine that's probably going to last you a good 4 or 5 years, right? And so I think that you're going to have to bump up the specs on this thing and basically max it out. So you can go up to, for the hard drive, the most you want to get is, let's see here, you can go up to a 2 terabyte drive. The memory, you can go up to 64 gigs. So what you want to do if you're video editing and if you're making money on this, especially if it's a business, then you want to, you know, you got to invest in it. And I think that you want to do the most you can do. So whatever you can do financially with this computer, I think you got to get that. Now, once you do that, you still have to add a monitor, you got to add a keyboard, you got to add all these extra things. So you might look into getting a iMac. And with the iMac, you get a display built in, you get, you got to watch the specs on this thing, because if you go with the lower model, which is the 21.5 inch model, you're not going to get the best specs. You have to go with the 27 inch model to get the better configurations. And when you do kind of like the top configuration, you're looking at starting price of about $2,300. So, but that's the way you get the better drives. Don't go with the basic iMac at all if you're trying to do anything that is video related. It'll do it. And almost any computer will do this nowadays. I mean, I use my laptop. I've been editing video for 10 years on computers, 15 years. And believe me, they can all do it. It's just how long do you want to wait and how frustrated do you want to be when you're editing that video? So again, you want to get the best specs you can get, which is the best processor, the best type of hard drive. So a solid state hard drive is going to be way better than any of these standard kind of spinning hard drives. All these things you need to think about when it comes to your computer, because you want it to last long. And believe me, there's nothing more frustrating than sitting there waiting for your computer, just waiting for your computer to do something when you know it should be done by now. Mike is in Portland. Mike, you're on with Rich.
Hi, Rich. I'm hoping you can help me out with this. I'm having trouble with Apple, my iPhone 6S, and the Genius Bar. Now, I'm a bit of a battery nut, and I had the 6S now for a few years, obviously. I got it when it was new, and I immediately put on the Apple battery case, which is the best battery case around because it saves your battery in your phone. It operates, as you know, off the case first, and until the case completely is discharged, it won't leak any battery, take any battery from the phone itself.
What was that? You got some stuff going on. Is that your battery indicator?
No, computer just, you know, beeped into me. What can I do? I just put it on mute. Sorry about that.
No worries. So what can I help you with?
Well, I, even with the battery case on, every so often I'll show that the battery is at 99% when it should be at 100%. Because it's taking the charge from the battery. So I went to the Apple store, and they said, oh, it's a piece of software on the phone. The app is, one of the apps is drawing power, and there's something wrong with it, which it shouldn't be. They don't know what it is. And they said, what we need to do, it's not the battery. And the least invasive thing to do is completely and totally reset your iPhone, but then not use the not use Apple to download all the apps again, but install every app from the beginning completely without going to your settings and not using the iCloud to reinstall it.
I do agree with that. That is my favorite way to set up a phone. Oh, yeah. I always set up my phone. I call it from scratch, because if you use an iCloud. Now, look, this is a show for mainstream folks. And so I will tell for the mainstream person, the average person, yes, you'll be just fine going through iCloud to restore your iPhone. But we're talking to Mike here in Portland, who is concerned about a 1 percentage point on your battery. So, Mike, I get the feeling.
Sometimes 2, sometimes 3.
Okay, look, but here's what's happening, okay? So what's happening here is that the Apple guy was correct. Something is draining your battery because it's an app that is using a little bit of your battery, and it's not a perfect science. It's not like your phone is charging 100% as it's going along, right? There are times when it will dip, and then the battery goes in, it kind of kicks in and brings you back up to that 100%. So just because you've got this battery on does not mean that you're going to be walking around at 100% 100% of the time. So, and I do think there is some software going on there that is kind of managing what's going on your phone to make sure that everything is running smoothly, right? If this thing was just charging your phone 24/7 nonstop, there could be a problem, right? So I think that there is some software management going on. You said you had the smart battery case from Apple, which means that, you know, Apple kind of talks to that case. That's one of the benefits of having the Apple one. So, I think that it's not that big of a deal. One thing I would do, though, Mike, is I would go into your settings, and two things I check. Number one, the iPhone 6S had a recall on the battery. So I would go to apple.com and actually just search on Google for iPhone 6S program for unexpected shutdown issues. So a bunch of the brand new iPhone 6S's, when they first came out, the battery was defective. And so Apple will replace that free of charge. And so these are older phones. You know, you're talking September and October 2015, right? So Apple will do that. So I'd pop in your serial number there, and I'd see if your battery is affected by that. I'm not sure they're still doing the free replacements. That program might have ended, but at least you can see if your battery was affected by that. The second thing I would do, and this applies to everyone with an iPhone, especially an older phone, there's a new setting in called battery in your settings. So go to General, and then battery, and you'll see there's an option called battery health. And two things. Number one, on the first screen, you can see what apps are using your battery the most. So if you notice an app is using your battery that you're not really using, delete that app, get rid of it, and you know your battery will last longer. Second thing is battery health. And this tells you how well your battery is doing. And so on my phone right now, it's saying it has a maximum capacity of 100%, which means that's good. If you have an older phone, your battery capacity might not be. It's kind of like when you get older, you know, you just can't do the things that you were able to do back in the day, right? Like you wake up, you turn your neck to the left or the right, and you got that crick for the rest of the day. That only happens when you get older. It doesn't happen when you're young. So this is the same thing with your battery. When your battery gets older, it's been used for a while, the capacity runs out. So you can look in there and see if your capacity is a little bit lower than it used to be. And then underneath that, it says peak performance capability. So that will tell you kind of like, is your battery working at peak performance? So those are a couple of things that you can do, Mike, and good question there. But yeah, battery, I'm kind of a battery stickler too. I like my battery to be the best, and so do you. Rich DeMuro filling in for Leo Laporte today. This is The Tech Guy. We'll take more of your questions at 8888 Ask Leo. 8888 Ask Leo. Free call from anywhere in the U.S. after this. And look who it is, Leo Laporte. Special message from the guy himself, Leo.
More with Rich coming up in just a second, but first a word from PryLock. This is such an important tool. I want everybody to know about it. PryLock security training. So we keep hearing about breaches. What was it? Norsk Aluminum, the second or third largest aluminum producer in the world, Norwegian company, shutting its plants down because of ransomware. This happened a couple of weeks ago. How did the ransomware get in? It's almost always the same way. Same way hackers got into ASUS. They got into SP, Sony Pictures Entertainment. They got into Target. It's the same way with a phishing scam, a phishing email. A targeted email, sometimes we call it spear phishing, aimed at your employees or their employees in this case. Don't be the next breach victim. There are bad guys knocking at your business's door all the time. And the front line of defense, you can have all the security devices in the world. The front line of defense is your staff, your customers' service people, your employees, your accounting people, the people who have the keys to the kingdom, they're getting those phishing emails all the time. How do you keep them from opening them and opening you up to attack? Training with PryLock Security. Turns out 91% of all successful hacks start with a phishing email. If you don't train your employees, the hackers will school them, and you won't like the results. PryLock is easy. It's simple for you. It's great for your employees. It's very affordable. In fact, most comparable programs are more than 70% more expensive. PryLock's using some really sophisticated tools and to make it less expensive for them, more affordable for you. I love this. And it's also easy. You don't have to have an IT department to do this. They've got one-click setup, which lets you set up a full year's training, and it won't take you more than a minute to do. So what do you get? Okay, I love this. This is brilliant. First thing that happens, you get a baseline phishing test. For 3 days, without your employees' knowledge, don't tell them, they're going to get phishing emails. They're going to get the best quality phishing emails. In fact, you can work with PryLock to make them even more appealing. You know, put the boss's name in, things like that, and see if they bite. We're testing the employees without training, and I guarantee you they will bite. They'll fall for it. That creates a custom user page for each employee with resources for them, things like password managers, what to watch out for, stuff like that. And it gives you a baseline of where your employees stand right now. Next step, you get their security awareness training. I took this. It's really good. In fact, a lot of the premises, a lot of the ideas in this are things I've been preaching for years. And the fun thing is a little spoiler here, but you're taking the training and all of a sudden a hacker breaks into it and takes over. And what's great is the hacker is teaching you what they're up to, why they do it, how they think. And it's gamified. So your employees will have fun. I really enjoy doing it. But at the end, there's a 10-question final assessment. That's for compliance purposes. So you can show your whatever the compliance folks are. You know, yes, they've been trained. Now, after they take the training, which they'll enjoy, they'll really learn from. In fact, in the training, they get a chance to make a phishing email of their own and so forth. But that's not all. The rest of the year, PryLock will randomly schedule 24 additional phishing tests, emails, to all your employees. They're all different. They're all unique to see if they bite. When they click, you know, it's things like filling in credentials, everything from clicking a link to filling in credentials, you know, your bank account, to, you know, all of the different levels, and they will get an appropriate, whoops, you fell for it, and additional training. In fact, they can get specific videos designed around that particular issue. So those are automatically enrolled in that. And you get a report as an administrator with analytics 24/7. You get them in real time. Somebody bit, somebody fell. So this keeps them on their toes, keeps them aware, and really reinforces the learning from the security awareness training. If you're even more sophisticated, as I said, you can create phishing scams designed for your employees with their names and all, you know, stuff. Really make it good. Because believe me, the bad guys are going to make it good. You might as well. PryLock has a library of more than 1,000 phishing emails in use today. So they can really make it look real, but you can help make it even better. It talks about the psychology of hackers. It's not just a bunch of do's and don'ts. It really is teaching your employees how this works, why it works, how they're playing you. The tests include whether the phishing email was opened, whether links were clicked, whether attachments were downloaded. You know, you hear me say, do not download attachment. Enable whether they now, oh, they clicked the link, they downloaded the attachment, and then when they tried to open it up, they got a warning saying macros are disabled, enable them. If they enable that, there's another training lesson for that. Full analytics allow a deep dive for every user, fish, and click. And there's even a fun thing your employees will love called Send a Friend a Fish that spreads the training a little bit. Helps your employees, you know, they get a little bit more confident and they get a better understanding. They fish their friends. I got fished. It was pretty funny. I did not fall for it. PryLock offers one-year security programs for companies as small as 10 employees for $200. There's no reason not to do this. That's very affordable. And I really like this. I've been trying to teach. We get people all the time saying, how do I get my mom? How do I get my sister? How do I get my kids not to fall for these scams? You can get a single license gift card, a one-person's gift card that'll test them with two phishing tests a month for a year. And that's also available for individuals. So if you have a family member or somebody, maybe you, who falls for this a lot, they even have something for you. You never can learn all the ways hackers can con and trick you, but PryLock can show your employees the psychology being used against them so that they are not the next victim. PryLock.com/twit. Promo code Leo. You'll save 30% off their already really low price. This is a must for every business. PryLock, P-R-I, like privacy lock, PryLock.com/twit. And don't forget, my name, Leo, is the promo code. We thank PryLock. Dan at PryLock's a great guy, supporter of the show. I really appreciate that, Dan. You show your support for the show by using that special URL. PryLock.com/twit, promo code is Leo. Now back to Rich DeMuro.
Thanks, Leo. Welcome back to The Tech Guy. I'm Rich DeMuro, filling in today for Leo Laporte. Leo is on vacation and will return shortly. I'm The Tech Guy for KTLA Channel 5 in Los Angeles. Thanks so much for joining me on the show today. You can see me on KTLA every morning, 5 a.m., 7 a.m., 9 a.m. I do a tech report that basically lets you know about all the things that are interesting and happening in the world around you when it comes to tech. You also might see my report in other cities across the U.S. It airs in Cleveland, New Orleans, San Diego, Sacramento, Salt Lake. So I basically stand in my studio in Los Angeles and talk to all these different TV stations across America. So I present the same story, but for all different places. So it's kind of fun. And I feel like I live in a lot of different cities because I know what's going on in all these different places where my report airs. So it's been a great job. And I've been there for many, many years now in Los Angeles. So it's been fun. You can find me on Facebook at Rich on Tech. And phone lines for this show are open. 8888-ASK-LEO. 8888-ASK-LEO. We'll get to more of your calls in just a moment. But I wanted to talk about Walmart because I tested out some of these robots and things that Walmart is using. And now they're actually going to use more of them. So Walmart came out this week and said, you know what? Apparently, the robots are working because we're going to put them in more stores. So a couple of these robots, I'll go through them and tell you what they're doing. So first off, autonomous floor cleaners. This one's called the Auto C. They're going to put 1,500 of these things in stores nationwide. So now, here's the thing. Whenever I talk about this stuff, people get very up in arms because anytime they hear the word robot, they imagine it's killing jobs, right? And that may be true in certain ways, but you have to understand that it still takes people to make these robots. And Walmart is very careful. And almost every company that I talk to that puts robots out there always says, this will not impact our associates. This is an addition to our associates. I don't know if I believe that, but here's what it says. After an associate preps the area. So see, they're bringing the associate, the human, into this. This machine can be programmed to travel throughout the open parts of the store and cleaning and polishing the floor. So you've seen those guys kind of rolling around those giant like street sweeping equipment devices, but in stores, right? This is the same thing, except it goes by itself. Then they've got this Auto S technology. This one I actually saw in action. This is a shelf scanner. So they're going to put 300 additional of these bad boys out there into these stores. And what these things do is they look like a giant wand that just wanders around the store with this bright light that scans the aisles. And what it's doing is it's taking thousands of pictures of the shelves to identify what products are out of stock. So that way you can get those products back in stock faster. It can also identify pricing that is wrong. So let's say someone puts a whole bunch of, you know, paper towels in the wrong place with the wrong price. This will identify if that's wrong. So that's kind of neat. It's not as fast as you think. When I did the story with this company, I thought it was like kind of instantaneous. It's not as instantaneous as you'd like, but it's pretty fast. And the benefit over a human is that this can scan, you know, millions or tens of thousands of products in a day versus a human that can kind of eyeball it and identify certain things. Then they've got this fast unloader. This is it's kind of like a way to move inventory from the truck into the back room of Walmart. They're going to do 1,200 of those. And then you've got these things, which are just massive. They're called pickup towers, 900 of those. So if you haven't seen one of these in your store, you'll probably have one soon. You order something online, the employees, again, see how they're bringing in the employees to the mix. They go, let's say I order a phone case at a Walmart online and I pick it up in the store. Well, an employee will go find that phone case that I bought and they will go ahead and load it into this machine. I go into the store. It's like a giant vending machine. I scan my phone at the base of that machine. And next thing you know, my product just spits out and I can walk out the door without having to go to the cashier, without having to talk to anyone. And it's pretty instantaneous. I watched this thing in action. We went to the store in Lancaster, California to see this pickup tower. And it was pretty impressive. The thing is about 16 feet tall and it towers. It's giant. So you can't miss it if you go into a Walmart store, but they're going to have 900 of those. And I think, you know, you might say, well, why would you order something online and pick it up in store? Well, there are use case scenarios for that. You know, it might be faster because you get something in 2 hours versus overnight or 2 days later. So I do this often. I like that the stores are doing more of the online in-store pickup because you order online, so it's easy. You can use a promo code. It's simple, and then it's efficient, and then you go in there on your way home, and you pick that up. Now, what they're hoping you do is pick up some other things in addition. So when you go to Walmart, next thing you know, there's a couple other things that look really nice to you as well, and you hopefully get those. Barbara is in Huntington Beach. Barbara, you're on with Rich.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in.
This is my question. I have an iPhone 6. I've had it for about 2.5 years, and I love everything about it, except I really feel like I need a bigger screen. I'm at the age where I need reading glasses for everything, and so I'm always having to take out my readers to look at my screen. So I've been doing some research on the internet, and I think I would be happy with the iPlus or the 7 Plus instead of going up to like a 10 or something like that. I'm not a heavy user. I use less than 2 gigabytes a month. But I just want to know from you if you think I'd be making a mistake by not buying one of the newer editions.
Well, it depends what you do on your phone. So the iPhone 7 Plus is going on, you know, 3 generations ago, so at least.
Right.
Yes. So and the price, I'm looking at the price online. What price are you getting that at? Have you priced it out?
I have priced it out. If I go to an Apple store and turn in my phone to them, I can get it for about $425.
$425.
And right.
Did they recommend the iPhone XR to you at all?
Well, I went to a Verizon store and they did. I haven't really talked to anybody at Apple about the XR. I can tell you what I use it for real quickly. Emails, internet surfing, reading books and newspapers, maps if I'm out running around, and podcasts, and that's about it.
Okay. So the bottom line is, when it comes to the older iPhones, the main thing that you miss is it's a camera. Now, you didn't mention camera at all, so I don't think that'll be a problem with you, but the processor gets slower as you, you know. Now, here's the thing. The processor doesn't actually get slower. It's the apps that are getting bigger and more kind of, they require more of the processor. So the phone is not really any slower than it was when it came out. It's just that the apps require more processing. So that is my only concern, is if you get a phone today, you want it to last a good 3-4 years, right? You've had this old one for about 3-4 years now. So I would say $425 is a good deal and you're trading in your old phone, but if you could maybe get together the extra money, I think the iPhone XR would be a better bet for you, because let's say it's $100 more. Well, now you divide that by 4 years, it's $25 a year. You're already going up to $425. So an extra $100, it's not like you're spending more in a big way. It's just a little bit more than what you would originally spend. And you're getting a device that from day one is going to be way better and prepare you for the future. Whereas this phone is already 3 years behind. So you're already sort of behind, and kind of that clock is ticking to where your apps are going to feel really slow. The operating system is going to feel really slow. So, and the screen size on the XR is really nice. It's exactly what you want. It's got the latest processor from Apple that, by the way, is really fast and really good. And it has the latest camera technology, which, by the way, is light years ahead of the iPhone 7. So you didn't mention the the camera aspect, but I do think the iPhone XR would be a better deal. So, Barbara, I think, yes, you'll be happy and you'll be fine with the iPhone 7 Plus, but I think you're going to be way happier with the new iPhone XR, which is a great, fantastic device for most people. So see how much it is, especially with the trade-in. Apple is doing some aggressive offers on it, but that's what my advice would be. You're listening to The Tech Guy. Rich DeMuro here with you on this beautiful day talking about technology. We got more of your calls. I've got some emails, got some fun stuff planned, including our photography guy later on in the show. But give me a call, 8888-ASK-LEO. You want to talk about technology, we'll try to answer it. You're listening to The Tech Guy. More after this. But first, let's go to Chaz in Claremont, California. Chaz, what's going on?
Hi, Rich. This is Chaz. Fan of yours on TV, and you're doing a great job on the radio.
Oh, thank you. What can I help you with?
Talking about batteries earlier, and I recently upgraded to a new laptop for my primary laptop. Our old one is working okay, and we're going to kind of have it around the house as backup and use it for different things. It's over 10 years old, but we're using okay. Working okay, except there's a little X down by the battery, and it's saying replace battery. Now, again, this is a unit that's over 10 years old, but it's still working. And I found some batteries for this particular unit. It's a Toshiba. That, you know, in the $25 range, is that an easy matter to just get that like from Amazon online and replace it yourself? Is there any tricky part of replacing a battery for a laptop?
Well, here's the beauty of having the internet at your disposal is that you can see exactly what the steps are before you do it. So, I think you can do it. I think it's, I mean, I don't know this specific Toshiba laptop, but the reality is you'll be able to figure out if you can do it. So what I normally do in these situations is I just do a lot of research online. Take the laptop, pop in the model number online. First off, see, you said that the battery's $25. So if you buy it and you ruin it and this thing is 10 years old, I don't think you're out that much. So I would say go for it. The tricky part is really just opening the thing up and making sure that you don't mess up anything else while you replace the battery. Now, I will say that I think that the older devices out there, like this laptop, were actually easier to replace things like a battery than the newer devices. So I probably would not try to replace the battery on my MacBook Pro, but back in the day, I would always replace the hard drive and the memory. But nowadays, they've gotten the components so small and they're kind of so into the main board integrated that it's tougher to do these things. But there is a wealth of information, Chaz, online. So I say go for it. And I think you're going to do just fine. And if it doesn't work out, I mean, obviously make sure that the things are backed up, make sure that all the software is backed up and whatever you need, because if you mess this thing up, you're going to be not happy, but you're not going to be out too much. You have an old device. You have a battery that was only $25. You could probably replace return the battery to Amazon if it doesn't work out for you. But go online. So some of the resources for doing this kind of stuff is iFixit. They have a lot of tutorials on this stuff. They might not have your specific laptop, but they do have a lot of things where they go through and they show you exactly how to take something apart and put it back together again and replace the components. They're probably the top website for that, iFixit.com. Then I would go to YouTube and type in your model number of your device and look for information there as well and just watch a lot of videos. I've done a lot of these things myself at home. My proudest moment was probably back in the day when I replaced my battery in my iPod. And this was back when you could do this kind of stuff. And I pulled the glue. The toughest part was getting the glue off of the bottom, because it was like if you pulled it too hard, you would pull the whole thing apart and it would be messed up. But if you pulled it just right, it would work perfectly. I put the new battery in and it was great. I don't even know why my battery was bad on the iPod. I don't even think I had it for that long. But great question. And I think today, in this day and age, with all the resources we have on the internet, yeah, go ahead and just try those things. DIY it up. Greg, Anaheim Hills, welcome to The Tech Guy. What's going on?
Rich, I love you on KTLA.
Thank you.
I have an issue with my wife's iMac. It's 2007. It's running the latest operating system that it can handle, which is El Capitan, and it's the latest version of El Capitan. And she's clicked on something that now has taken over her Safari app. No matter what page you go to, what tab you open, even if you change the home page, the default home page and the preferences, it always ends up at Yahoo Safe Finder, no matter what.
Yeah, You've got some malware on there. That's what's happening. So have you checked the Safari extensions?
Yes, I have it. It's none of the three that she uses. An interesting thing is if I select the application and do a get info on it, there's a second everyone user group combination listed with privileges called custom. And I've never seen that before.
That's interesting. Well, I think you got to find this malware on your computer, and you got to get it off there, because that's what's going on. It's basically this is called a browser hijack software. So a lot of these things are out there, and what they do is you download some sort of program, and it runs on your computer, and next thing you know, your computer is hijacked. So every time you make a search, that company is getting a little bit of money because you're clicking on ads that normally would be a Google ad. So you can either switch to a different browser, so you can just download Chrome and use that as your browser. But if she's stuck on Safari, then you got to get this out of there. So a couple ways you can do that is, the big one is Malwarebytes. That's obviously the big program that pretty much everyone uses to search their computer for malware. So if you haven't run that on your device, I'd run that. So that's the number one thing to do, Malwarebytes, and that should take care of it. Number two, well, before I even did Malwarebytes, what I would do is, personally, I would go through my hard drive and look at all my applications, and any application I don't recognize in that list, just go ahead and delete it and get rid of it that way. So, and then I, of course, restart my computer and see if that helps. If that doesn't help, then the next thing I would do is, you might have to get a program like Clean My Mac. And Clean My Mac is a paid program, but I believe you can download it and try it for free. And they just added a malware detector on there. So if the Malwarebytes doesn't figure it out, you can always go to Clean My Mac and see if their malware removal program or scan will get rid of that program. But it's pretty much toolbars. Like, that's what's happening. You know, these toolbars are they're sideloaded onto your computer. They're downloaded when you download another program. So a lot of free programs, the way that they support those free programs is by teaming up, I quote unquote, teaming up with one of these malware kind of, they don't see themselves as malware, I guess, but they really are. It's just stuff that you don't want on your computer. And you should be able to get rid of it. Safari, it's actually interesting that it's in Safari and it's not in the Safari extensions, but that's the first place I'd look. And there used to be a setting in Safari to kind of reset the whole entire program. I don't see that in the latest one, but I used to love that because you could literally just reset the entire Safari program just by going into the settings, and it would basically kind of clear out everything. But go into the extensions and see if it's there. Welcome back to The Tech Guy. Rich DeMuro in for Leo Laporte today. We're talking technology, taking your calls at 8888-ASK-LEO. But on the line right now, Chris Marquardt joining me to talk about all things digital photography. Chris, welcome to the show.
Rich, good to talk to you again.
So this is wild. This is the picture seen around the world, right? What am I talking about?
Well, you're talking about, I think, one of the biggest feats of computational photography that we have seen, and it's something that even non-photography nerds are going to be interested in. And just to take one step back, computational photography, we have it in our smartphones, the computation in our devices that corrects for lens imperfections and for color fringing and vignetting and stuff. And then if you use the portrait mode on your smartphone and it blurs the background, that is computational photography. The fact that we now have multiple cameras on our phones that all look at the same thing, you have like spaced out cameras that can together be more than just one single camera and do interesting things.
So what does that mean? They're taking, like, I've seen the, you know, at the Apple events and stuff where they show, like, you know, they take one picture and they like kind of like parse it out, and there's like five pictures that took that one picture. What is happening in there?
Well, the camera is looking at, well, first of all, the camera is looking at things of different from different points, so it can find out what the depth is in the photo. So things that are further away, like the background, it can then separate that out and blur it. But then the camera will also take multiple photos in succession and put them together in some magical or auto-magical way. So you get I mean, look at the Google Pixel, for example, with its night sight mode. That's, it creates photos out of like 10 or 15 individual shots. You don't even know that when you do this. So the computational photography thing is pretty much here and everyone is using it. But what these scientists now have done is they have taken a picture of a black hole by doing computational photography. And that is... That is why I find this so intriguing and so interesting. And first of all, it's not really a photo of a black hole because you can't shoot a photo of a black hole. It's black, doesn't let any light out. But there's this halo around it, the swirling cloud of gas and matter that forms around a black hole. And that was, that's what was predicted. And that's what they finally managed to see.
Yeah, like I mean, the theory of relativity was like, you know, I mean, you're talking, what, 100 years ago, and we finally got proof.
Einstein predicted this.
I mean,
this, you know?
That's amazing. How in the world did that happen? So it, we're not talking, if you saw the picture, and it's this amazing picture, it's blurry, but it's you see what you're talking about. It's that kind of looks like a ring of fire almost. This this wasn't an astronaut just like taking his camera out, pointing and shooting at this thing. This is this is what? How did they come up with this?
This is on a different level. And this thing is 300 million trillion miles away. So this is really far away. And hardly any light is coming here because it is so far away. So how they did as well, first of all, they created something they call the Event Horizon Telescope. And it's not just one telescope. It's a camera, pretty much a camera the size of our planet. And that's why I find this so interesting. And there are a few differences to regular cameras. So first of all, it's based on radio telescopes, and a radio telescope looks at radio waves, but in, at a different wavelength than the visible light. And then, of course, this camera doesn't cover the entire planet. If you look up outside, you don't see something above you. No, but what it's doing is it links eight telescopes from all around the globe. And it creates, via software, it creates a virtual telescope that is the size of a planet. And, I mean, the best way to, I think, understand is just think of that sensor chip inside your camera and just imagine that most of those pixels are missing. They're just a few in different spots. And they came up with a way to compute out of these individual telescopes that are all over the world. They and using the rotation of the planet in addition, they came up with some really smart math to recreate that picture from those individual telescopes. And the resolution of that thing is amazing. I mean, we see this blurry ring, this fiery blurry ring, and you go, oh, wait a minute, that's all blurry, but this is so far away that it is still a relatively sharp photo. I read somewhere that the resolution of this camera, the sharpness of this camera is... let me see this. Enough to read a newspaper in New York from a sidewalk cafe in Paris.
Okay, Chris, so, when am I getting that on my smartphone? Let's be honest. Come on, I want that.
Well,
is that happening anytime soon? I've seen the new Huawei, the P30. It looks like it looks like they're doing something like that. It's like the lenses are pretty darn good on that thing.
We are looking at smartphones that get more and more cameras. There are prototypes out there that have 5 or 9 cameras in on a smartphone back, and this is an area of cameras which is somewhat similar to what these astronomers have done. And with these cameras, you can then apply computation to do these things that we sometimes see in cameras, like the refocusing after the fact, artificially enhancing resolution, getting more low light capability. So some of that is coming our way, probably not the capability to be able to look at a black hole like 53 light years away.
So yeah, so we're not quite I'm just there reading yet. I'm reading some of the stuff out of the release. So yeah, like you said, about 55 million light years from Earth, the black hole is 6.5 billion times the mass of the sun. Catching its shadow involved 8 ground-based radio telescopes around the globe operating together as if there were one telescope the size of our entire planet. Now, I know we saw that one picture of the female scientist going around, and she actually wrote on her Facebook page that it wasn't just her. You know, she's gotten a lot of the publicity for this, but they show the team. It's a lot of folks that it took to get this to get this thing going, right?
Oh, yes.
A lot of smart people.
Well, a lot of smart people. This is a huge scientific project that covers, again, the entire planet. There's telescopes in Hawaii, in Mexico, in Arizona, in the Sierra Nevada, in Chile, in Antarctica. There's like all these global teams working together to make this happen. They had to synchronize those different telescopes using atomic clocks. There were petabytes of data. They couldn't just take the data from the telescope and send them over the internet. They had to ship the hard drives because it was so much data, it was impossible to get it over any other way. So there's a massive team behind this. And yeah, it's amazing. And it's it is now a new type of camera that is available to the scientists, and that will in future probably yield even crazier stuff. So
yeah, I mean, we've heard how a lot of things that start with NASA trickle down. And what about, you've heard the story like Tang, right? You know, you remember that powdered stuff? I don't know if you had it where you
were. Yeah.
But you know, like that was like supposedly first used for outer space. And then what are the other things? I mean, astronaut ice cream never really took off in a big way. But you know what I mean? Like these things that start for space, I'm sure there's other examples I can't think of right now, but they trickle down and they're used in everyday life. And so I think the camera technology that they worked on, Velcro. I got engineer John telling me Velcro is another one.
True.
So all these things that sort of start, with outer space, you sometimes trickle down into the average consumer's use. And I think what you're talking is that the camera technology and the things that they had to do, obviously it's on a mass level, could trickle down into our cameras. And it already is in a lot of ways.
Some of that is already here. We are seeing some of that already inside your phone. Again, portrait mode, the thing that blurs out backgrounds, is doing something similar. It uses a couple of cameras that are at a distance on the same phone, and they together give you the data or give the phone the data to be able to compute the background and make it blurry or swap it out in some cases. So we are looking at some of that being here already. Now, we don't have radio telescopes on our smartphones, but it is a very, very similar thing that's happening here.
All right, Chris, how can folks get a hold of you?
Oh, just go to Discover the Top Floor. That's where I have my photo tours, workshops, and stuff.
All right.
The hub that leads to everything.
Chris Markhort, Photo Guy, thanks so much for joining me today on The Tech Guy. Rich DeMuro with you here. We're going to take more of your questions at 8888 Ask Leo right after this. I know Leo's shown it, but look at that. There's my book right on Leo's desk. 101 Handy Tech Tips for the iPhone. Good stuff in here, folks. Look at that. Look at that. Look how meaty this is. Oh, look at that. Yeah, baby. iPhones need a manual that big. Level chaos, come on. I do have Android right here. In fact, I carry two. I've got the Samsung and the Pixel. So I do. I love Android. Although I will say that after writing the book for iPhone, I did fall in love with the iPhone. So I see the benefit of both. But if you're a nerd, you like Android because you can do way. It's your phone. Apple, it's their phone, right? No matter what you want to do on it, it's theirs. Android, it's yours. And yes, Android Auto is much better. Let's go to Mark in Pomona. Mark, you're on with Rich. What's going on?
Hey, Rich. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Can you tell?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Hey, I have a Samsung Note 5, and I need to upgrade. The phone I bought was through Best Buy. It was a Verizon Unlock, and I've had a lot of problems, I think, because of the unlock. Like, I can't dial my voicemail from this phone. I have to dial from a different phone.
What?
So I'm looking at the Note 9, and wanted to, I guess, get your ideas on the carrier side of it. I want to go through somebody that doesn't have, that supports, you know, a regular phone, not an unlock. And right now I have Metro. Metro was purchased by T-Mobile, so I'm thinking T-Mobile, but I wanted to get your opinion.
Right now you have Metro. What do you mean by that? I thought you had Verizon.
Metro PC is a carrier.
It was purchased by
T-Mobile.
Right, but I thought you said you had Verizon. I'm confused.
No, the phone was a Verizon Unlock that I got through Best Buy.
Oh, got it. And you were using it with Metro.
Yeah, and okay. It's been problematic. And they said, no problem, unlocked would work fine with Metro.
No. That's where your problem started because
yeah.
You had a Verizon-specific device that, yes, you can unlock it, and Verizon sells a lot of their devices unlocked, actually, or they'll unlock it after a certain amount of days. But yeah, when you bring that to a Metro, you are going to have some issues. It doesn't support all the bands. So what are you looking to do? What can I help you with?
Well, do you think that that's a better move to go through somebody like T-Mobile that has the Note 9 and supports it?
I would. Yeah, I think so. Okay. If you're going to, here's the thing. I love unlocked phones, but I'm a person who is constantly changing things out, switching things up. I'm testing various things. So I am a big fan of unlocked because I can test different carriers inside unlocked phones. Now, if you go to Samsung.com and purchase the Note 9 from them, you will get a truly unlocked device that does work across all the networks in the right ways. So that's number one. So that's the device I have for the Note 9. Mine is truly unlocked from the factory. And every time I put in a different SIM card, it gets a little tiny update from the carrier. And it kind of makes that phone work perfectly for that carrier. So that's number one. The thing is, when your experience with an unlocked phone is you had a Verizon device that is meant for Verizon using on a different network. Now, that will work. It just won't always be perfect because, like you found out, the voicemail did not follow through because it was set up for Verizon and it didn't get the instructions on how to work with Metro. So that's number one. So if you truly want to go, if you want to stay with Verizon or you want to go to Verizon or whatever, now, are you concerned about the quality of the carrier? Is Metro working out just fine for you?
It started out, you know, kind of sketchy, but it's gotten very, very good. I don't think there's really any issues or drops or anything like that.
So if that's the case, then I would just go to T-Mobile. You're going to get the best deal on the phone probably through T-Mobile. And what I would do is I would kind of track it for a little bit. So these things go in waves, right? So T-Mobile especially does a lot of deals on things. And it's sometimes the deal is only for a weekend. And a lot of times they're pegged to some sort of weekend holiday. You've got Easter coming up. Maybe they'll do something for that. But right now I'm looking on their website and it looks like it is full price, right? That's what I'm looking at. So I would wait to buy this phone because Samsung devices especially, they do a lot of deals. And it's just a matter of catching that fire, right? And now I'm in the place where T-Mobile actually emails me as a journalist every time they have a deal. So
I can
if you email me, I can text you or email you the next time that they actually do something. But I would look under T-Mobile, they have a deals hub, and I would see. So right now they're doing a buy one, get one free on the Samsung Galaxy S10e, $300 off an iPhone, 50% off the LG G8. And that's it. Nothing about the Note 9. So you might have to wait until there's some sort of push for the Note 9 to get the better deal. But I would do that personally. The other thing I would do is go to Samsung.com and just see what they're giving you. Because a lot of times they'll give you a pretty good trade-in for your old phone. And the Note 5 is kind of old, but you might get some decent trade-in. So I would go there and check what they're doing. But,
yeah, it's too old. They're not supporting the operating system, so I'm now getting all these predatory ads coming in, and I got to do something new.
Yeah, but I think go to T-Mobile, see what their deal is, see what they offer you, and go from there. But I would say just if you're going to stick with T-Mobile for, let's say, 2 or 3 years, then you don't really need an unlocked device. Unlocked devices are for people that travel a lot or are planning on switching carriers a lot, or someone like me who likes to test various carriers using the same phone. But in America, most phones are sold kind of through the carriers and tied to that carrier. And we don't have contracts anymore, but the way they tie us to that carrier is really by making our payments spread out over 24 months. You're kind of in a contract anyway, because you'd have to pay up the whole amount.
That was the reason I went with the unlock. I didn't really want Verizon or the contract, and as you say, they don't have those so much anymore. So.
Yeah, and you can still do that. You can pay it up front with T-Mobile, but I would do the math. If you're good with that stuff and you don't really get behind on things, I mean, why pay it all up front if you can pay it, you know, month by month? It's just, it's a personal preference, right?
Yeah.
So, but good question. And Mark, send me an email, hello@richontech.tv, and I'll if I see anything come through about Note 9. And also the other thing to do, by the way, is just search Note 9 deals on Google. And a lot of times these blogs will write up deals as they come about. And so that's another way. Right now I'm seeing deal alert, save $500 on a 512 gigabyte Galaxy Note 9. So that's a one-day sale. That was a one-day sale back in March. But these, again, these things pop up. So create a Google alert for Note 9 deal. And, you know, next thing you know, as soon as someone writes about that, you'll get it.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for the advice. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Mark and Pomona, for giving me a call. Let's go to Gloria. Gloria is in North Hollywood. What's up, Gloria?
Hi, Rich. I'm thinking about getting rid of my satellite service. And I was wondering what you thought about the Amazon Fire Family TV stick.
Well, I like it a lot, Gloria, because that's what I use in my house. So as the tech, as not the tech guy, that's Leo, right? But I am a tech guy. As a tech guy, I love the Fire Stick and I love the Fire TV Recast. So in my place, my setup is Fire TV Recast, Fire TV Stick, and an over-the-air antenna. And along with some streaming services, I get everything I need. So I get all the local channels for free in HD. I get a DVR and I get whatever I want streaming through Netflix and all the other ones on the Fire TV.
Okay, now, so I'm looking at several of them. Which one do you suggest? Like there's one for, I'm looking online at Amazon.
Yep.
And there's one for $29.99. I think there's another one for $39.99.
Yep. Get the best you can get, which is the Fire TV Stick 4K. So it's 30. I don't even know why they sell the Fire TV Stick for $30 and this one's 40. Spend the extra $40. You get a much more powerful device. You get a really nice remote, the Alexa voice remote. You get that with the cheaper one, but this, just go with the Fire TV Stick 4K. That's the best one they've got right now. And are you planning on adding the DVR, the Fire TV Recast with the antenna?
I don't know that much about tech, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, the Fire TV Recast is a separate thing, and that lets you get your over-the-air channels. So if you still want to get, like, you know, your local channels 2, 4, 5, 7, you need to get an antenna to do that. Now, there is a way around that. You can subscribe to one of these services like DirecTV Now, or YouTube TV. Actually, I don't think YouTube TV works with Fire Stick, but you can subscribe to DirecTV Now and get your local channels minus KTLA. So, but I would, if I were you, I would just start, Gloria, I would just start, number one, by making that amazing call to DirecTV to tell them to, you know, I'm not going to use you anymore. I would make that call first. Buy the Fire TV Stick 4K for $40. You plug it into the back of your TV. Don't cancel your cable internet. You do need internet to use the Fire Stick. But get this thing, and I think you're going to be very happy with it. It's what I use at home, and you're going to love it. I think the Fire TV Stick will be great. You have a TV. You have, what kind of internet do you have?
I have DirecTV. I'm sorry, not DirecTV. DSL Extreme.
Okay, so you have DSL Extreme.
DSL. They tell me I have DSL.
DSL Extreme. Do you know the speed?
That's the type of.
Oh, okay, from AT&T. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay, so DSL Extreme, let me see how fast that is. AT&T, that's not very fast. Okay, so it might work, but here's the thing. Are you opposed to getting Spectrum internet?
Well, I'm not opposed to it. I'm sick of their flyers and all that kind of stuff, but I don't know anybody. I could check with other people to see what they think about DSL Extreme.
Because the DSL Extreme, it may work, but it's probably not going to be that fast. So if you're going to go for streaming only, I would probably upgrade your internet as well. And Spectrum internet for the first 12 months is $45 a month. Mm-hmm. Now, are you in a contract with DirecTV?
Oh, yeah, for the rest of the year, and then I can just...
Okay.
December, I can get rid of them.
Okay. They will also buy...
DirecTV, no, I'm not in a contract. I'm pretty sure I'm not in a contract. But DSL Extreme, I have to go to the end of the year because...
Oh, you do. Okay. Well, then just get the call. Okay. Call DSL Extreme. Ask what speed you are. I think you're going to be okay, but just, you know, you need a little bit faster internet if you're going to stream everything. But I think you'll be okay. But try that out.
And this will be able to, in other words, it's I guess you would call it a thumb drive that you put in your TV. I've already looked for the HTML input,
yep.
So I know that it'll fit.
Yep.
But you do get to watch it on TV. I don't have to sit in front of my computer.
No, no. Yes, exactly. It goes through your TV. It's actually great. I mean, my mom, who is not a techie, I set her up with this thing, and she loves it. So I think that it'll take a little bit of getting used to compared to regular TV, but you'll figure it out, and it's pretty good. And you won't be paying a lot.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Okay. All right, thanks, Gloria. Have a great day. Get that landline figured out, too, while you're at it.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hey, we'll have more Rich tomorrow in just a little bit. As I said, I will be back next week, tanned, rested, and ready to answer your tech questions. I want to interrupt one more time, though, briefly to talk about something we're using in Hawaii on vacation. It's really intended for business, but it's so cool. It's called Peak, PTT, Push to Talk. Peak is the leading provider of push-to-talk systems for business communications. You see them on construction sites. You see them in security. This is better than a company cell phone. Not only are cell phones expensive, frankly, if your employees are playing Candy Crush on them, they're a time waster. You can boost productivity, cut down costs, and improve communications with Peak PTT. Peak provides advanced IP-based push-to-talk systems for small, medium, and enterprise businesses. It leverages the internet, but also cellular data and Wi-Fi networks. That's one of the ways it can be more affordable to transmit your voice over the internet. You get instant talk. You get location monitoring. Yeah, GPS is built in. And there's a button on the top for an emergency alert, which is really great. Local, nationwide, and worldwide coverage. So it's going to work everywhere. And the devices, and there are several. I have the Everest. That's what we're taking on our trip with us. They're made to withstand dirt, water, extreme temperatures. I love this. There's no contract. Billing is month to month. So you use it as you need it, not 1 minute more. And I like Push to Talk because there's no dialing, waiting, ringing, pickup. There's less than 1 second connection time. They have a group feature that lets you talk with hundreds of users at once. You can talk privately with anyone in that group. So it's very quick to find the right person, press the button, say, hey, where are you? Central tracking and communication center from any PC. So you can run a switchboard, basically, at your front office if you want. I love the GPS tracking. That's not just for safety. It also for visibility. You can see where your drivers are, where your security officers are, where your employees are. So the K2 is great for medium and small-sized businesses. Actually, this is, I can't remember which we took with us. I think we're, well, let me see. So the K2 PTT is like a walkie-talkie style. So you put it on your belt. It's PTT 84G. But it also supports Android and iOS apps and that PC dispatch software for device tracking. That's probably the one we're going to bring. The Everest is a little more rugged. It's the PTT 584G. And that thing is amazing. 5 nines of network availability. It works in every environment. Much lower latency rate than the big names you know. PC-based dispatch console. So you say, truck 54, get over there, or whatever. I don't know what you say. Which also means you can locate devices. You even have a map at the console. And this runs on a standard PC. You have a map of where everybody is. The other thing is it's efficient. Push-to-talk calls last on average 15 seconds. A traditional phone call, because you got to go, hi, how you doing? What's up? How's the weather? 50 seconds. So less than a third of the time. It's efficient. You're getting things done. It's work. Get in touch faster. Operate more efficiently with Peak PTT. So here's what you do. Go to peakptt.com. P-E-A-K. Like Mountain Peak. Get it? Everest K2. Clicking now. P-E-A-K P-T-T. Pushtotalk.com. P-E-A-K-P-T-T.com. And by the way, we do have a promo code. If you use that TWIT promo code, you'll get 15% off at checkout. That's a nice deal. PeakPTT.com. See the two models. See what's right for you. Don't forget that promo code TWIT. 15% off the entire purchase. Set up your whole staff. I love it. PeakPTT.com. Promo code TWIT. Use that promo code to show them you like the Tech Guy Show. And we thank them for supporting our network. PeakPTT.com. Promo code TWIT. Back to Rich tomorrow. Rich.
Welcome back to The Tech Guy. This is the show where we talk about technology and discuss any issues you're having with it, or maybe there's something you like about it. My name is Rich DeMuro, filling in today for Leo Laporte. I am the tech reporter for KTLA Channel 5 in Los Angeles. So on any given morning, you might see me pop up on your screen there. You also might hear me on KFI AM 640 every once in a while in Los Angeles. I'm there every Tuesday and Wednesday morning. Tuesday at 5 a.m., Tuesday at 8 a.m., Wednesday at 5 a.m. with my friends Jennifer Jones-Lee and Bill Handel. But here, I'm in for Leo. Thank you, Leo, for allowing me to take the reins of the show while you go on vacation. I always appreciate it when you do that. If you want to learn more about me, you can go to my website. It's richontech.tv. So we're going to get to more of your calls in just a moment at 8888-ASK-LEO, 8888-ASK-LEO. You know, you often think about Facebook, and a lot of us use it, and we love it. Well, we have a love-hate, right? A lot of people have a love-hate. I think Facebook is amazing for how it's connected the world in a way that we just never imagined possible. But it also has its downsides with privacy and all that good stuff. But you can't deny that there has been a moment in your life that you have sat there and said, wow, that's pretty awesome. Like for me, it's when I see the pictures I've uploaded of my kids and it shows me that memory. Like, here's what you were doing 2 years ago. And I see a picture of my kid and it's like, wow, that is just unbelievable. Like it's just things change and things go really fast with these kids. And I love that. I love that about Facebook. But Facebook paid $22 million last year to keep Mark Zuckerberg, their founder, safe. Does that sound about right? $22 million. So what did that include? $10 million for security costs, like security guards, equipment, services, and residential improvements. Well, I guess residential improvements means more security at his house. So, you know, Zuckerberg only gets a dollar as CEO, but he gets a lot of stock in the company. So he's doing okay. Even though he's only getting paid a buck, he's doing okay because he's got about $9 million in 2017 and $23 million in 2018. So this guy, I mean, you got to protect him, right? Because Facebook is Zuckerberg. It's synonymous with Mark Zuckerberg. And $2.6 million of his pay in 2018 was for private aircraft travel. So $2.6 million. Do that. Let's just divide that by $2.6 million divided by 12. You're talking a lot of money per month for travel. I think I can make do on that. A couple $100,000 a month. I think I can do on that. Zuckerberg's one of the richest people in the world. He's worth over $70 billion. I mean, I think that's fair. The guy has completely changed the way that we communicate in our modern time. So I'm good with that. Steve is in Calabasas. Steve, what's going on? Welcome to the Tech Guy.
I'm listening to you on the radio. My question is, I'm thinking about finding an alternate cell provider. Currently, I'm with AT&T. That works in my area. So does T-Mobile. But I see all kinds of other off-the-shelf, cheaper cell providers, and I'm hoping you can give me like a global take on what do you think are good ones? What are the trade-offs that I'm giving up if I buy some off-brand of cell service that really runs on the back of one of the major carriers? But what am I not getting when I pay some cheaper monthly price for it?
Okay, great question, and it really depends on your use case, like what you want out of your carrier. So imagine that the carrier is kind of the highest end you can get, right? So if you're buying meat in the grocery store, you know, they got like the prime, whatever it's called, you know, like the top elite meat, then you've got the middle stuff, and you've got the, you know, maybe the lesser so. So it's kind of the same thing with the carriers. It's the same network, you know, but it's just you're getting different features. And the number one thing that you have to kind of know about these, what they call them, MVNO, mobile virtual network operators, right? So that means that I go to Verizon, I say, hey, you know what? I want to start a cell phone company. So can I buy this much data from you and this much bandwidth from you, and I'm just going to sell it myself? That's really what these companies are doing. And so a lot of them run, there's only four networks in America. You've got T-Mobile, you've got Sprint, which are trying to merge into one. Then you've got AT&T, and you've got Verizon. all the other cell phone companies you see out there that are advertising, the Mint Mobiles of the world, the Visibles of the world, the Metro PCS of the world, all these other companies, Family from Walmart, all these companies run on a network. And if you go to Wikipedia, you can figure out which one. Most of the time, the networks do not tell you which one they run on, right? So if you're getting TracFone, they just say, we run on America's largest network. If you get Spectrum Mobile, it'll say, we run on America's most reliable network. Now the map is in red. That should give you a hint that that's Verizon. So again, what you're not getting, a lot of times these virtual operators will limit the speed to which you can access that network. So that may not be a problem for you. So if you go with something like a Cricket, they might be limited to 5 megabits per second, which means your download speed will never get faster than that. Now, if you're on Verizon, it can support download speeds up to 100 or something even faster, depending on where you are. But again, you're going to get the best that that network is capable of. When you're getting one of these, it's just a third party operator, basically. You're getting a better deal, but you're not getting the full breadth of that network. So does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. I mean, so I understand what you're saying. It depends on what services and what my critical need for time and use is. For me, you know, it's data and cell and the ability to flip back and forth depending on the area. If I'm not getting, Wi-Fi, if I'm not in a Wi-Fi area, and I need to be able to surf on the net, say, then I got to be able to do that by way of cell minutes or what used to be minutes.
Now data.
Ability to go back and data by way of cell instead of by way of whatever you would call the other.
So here's my thing. I think with all these third-party carriers, I think the main thing you need to do is look at the fine print, right? So a lot of them, the way that they get a cheaper price is, number one, the speed is limited. Number two, the data is limited. Most of the big carriers now are very, they like to sell a large unlimited data plan. That's what they make their money on. That's what they like to concentrate on. All these other prepaid and monthly things, they all like to sell you a cheaper plan, but there are caveats. Now, I'm not going to say that those caveats make or break you. So for instance, I set my mom up with Cricket, which she has had for many years now, and she can't believe every time it's basically Cricket is running on AT&T's network, except you're limited in your speed. And she only gets a couple gigs a month. But she goes to her friends and she says, I pay $35 a month for my cell phone service. And they can't believe it. They say, wait a second, I'm paying $100 a month for my AT&T. My mom says, it's the same exact network. But guess what? She doesn't need the speed. She's not sitting there downloading thousands of gigs of video a month like I am, or uploading a bunch of stuff to Facebook. She's uploading a picture here and there. She's surfing, you know, onto Instagram. And it works just fine. This has been going on for several years. So again, it really comes down to what you need out of your service. And so take a look at these different carriers out there. Go to Wikipedia, understand which network they're on. So the number one thing is to know if Verizon works in your area, then maybe you want to get one of these Verizon networks. Now, the best one from Verizon is something called Visible. It's a secret. They don't even advertise it, but it's a secret plan that they have that's $40 a month, unlimited, everything. But again, the only difference between that and the Verizon network when you pay full price is that your speeds are limited. So if you don't have a need for speed, then check out these other service plans that you see advertised all over the place. I think you'll be happy for them, but again, it depends on your use. For me personally, I need one of the big carriers. I need one of the big plans because I'm using sometimes up to 200 gigs a month on my phone. I know I'm not normal, but that's why I pay so much money every month to my carrier, because I understand I'm getting a lot of use out of that. If you don't need all that use, if you don't need all of that network capacity, then go ahead, try out one of these other networks. Most of the time, as long as you have the phone that supports them, you'll be just fine. Great question, Steve, and hopefully you save some money by switching to one of those carriers. My name is Rich DeMuro. RichOnTech.tv is my website, and the website for this show is TechGuyLabs.com. So if I mention something here, it will be on the Tech Guy Labs website, so you don't need to write it down while you're in your car. More of your calls coming up next at 888-ASK-LEO, 888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888-888- 727-5536. Rich DeMuro in for Leo. We'll talk to you next. Rose is in Los Angeles. Rose, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for giving me a call.
Rich, I'm having a problem. I have an iPhone 8, and just real random, quite often, my screen will go dim. And, you know, I've checked auto brightness, that's off. And I'm not sure what else I can try.
What type of phone?
It's an iPhone 8.
So it's an iPhone 8, and so what happens? All of a sudden, your screen just goes dim in the middle of what?
Yeah,
what are you doing on your phone?
It doesn't matter. I could be getting ready to take a picture. I could be on Instagram. I could be on Google, just for no reason.
And when did this start happening?
It's been a few months now.
And have you noticed any rhyme or reason?
Nope, nothing. And, of course, the few times I've gone to the Apple store, you know, it doesn't happen. And, you know, so they have no answer for me.
Okay. Well, I have a few things that it could be, okay? So, number one, do you have a case on your phone?
Yes.
Okay. So, there is a sensor that is near the top of your phone that is figuring out the ambient light situation with your phone. So if that sensor is in any way impeded, it will cause your screen to dim. So that's number one. Number two, if a bright light gets in that sensor or some sort of way that it tricks this sensor, it could also affect your screen. So that's number two. Number three, in your settings, if you go into you know, there is in your control panel, your brightness setting. What happens when this happens? Do you go in and how do you get this out of the dim? How do you get it out of that dim mode?
You know, I go look and it'll be as bright, as high as it can go. And literally the only way I can make it, you know, go back to normal is if I shut the phone down and restart it.
Okay. Well, it sounds like there could be an issue with the sensor itself. Did you have Apple do a diagnostics on this?
No, I haven't gone that far.
I think you need to do that. So I would say if it's not the case that's kind of interfering with your phone, a lot of times people get cases and they'll either stuff their new phone into their old case, which they say, oh, it fits just fine. And, you know, it's blocking a part of the camera sensor. It's blocking part of the... There's a lot of sensors on this device. A lot of microphone holes that you may not notice. These cases are specifically cut for the phone that they're made for. So when you take your old case and you put it on a new phone, yeah, it might fit, but it might be blocking some vital components of your device. Did you use your old case?
No, I bought a new case, and it's been on this phone since day one.
Okay. Well, so, I think it's time to bring it to the Apple store and have them do a little diagnostics. It could be a sensor that's failing. But I would check kind of what I would do in this case is the next times it happens, I would kind of think about what you were doing with your phone at the time. And I think that will help keep a little record and see, you know, okay, I did have my finger over the top of the, you know, where the ear speaker is. And that might have affected it. Or I did have my case kind of falling into the screen and that might have happened. So, or there was a bright light and I had my phone directly in the sun and that's what made it do that. So again, just kind of track the problem. Otherwise, I would bring it to the Apple store and just say, hey, can you do a little diagnostic? Because my ambient light sensor on this thing just does not seem to be working properly. But thanks so much for the call. Dolores is in Lancaster. Dolores, you're on with Rich.
Hi, Rich. Thank you so much for answering my call.
Thanks so much for calling.
My question for you is it safe to use my cell phone to scan documents to send to my attorney? These documents have, you know, private sensitive information like social numbers, social security numbers, and names and all that.
How are you sending them to the attorney?
Well, my phone is a Samsung Galaxy J3, and I uploaded or downloaded, I don't know what the proper word is, but an app that allows me to like take a picture and scan it and send it.
I'd be more concerned about that app. It depends on the app. I mean, that, you know, where'd you hear about this app?
Actually, I spoke to a teacher at my kid's high school, and she said that you can do that now with cell phones, and it just depends on your cell phone. So you Google which app fits your particular device. Okay.
All right. So here, to answer your question, anytime that you have sensitive information, the best case scenario is to not share that in any way, shape, or form through the internet, right? So if you can keep from doing that, that'd be the ideal situation. In today's day and age, that just doesn't happen, right? People say, hey, can I get a copy of your driver's license? You email them a picture of your driver's license. Can you sign this form and it's got your social security number on it and email it back to me, and you do that. Can you send this in? So the reality is we have these convenient methods at our disposal. And of course, there is the chance that someone can intercept what you're sending to your attorney and they can see that. But hopefully that doesn't happen. And most of the time it's not happening. So what I would do is try to take the proper precautions, right? So number one, if you're scanning these things on your phone, you want to make sure you're using an app that is a reliable and reputable app. So for me, if I'm doing that on the Android device, there are lots of apps out there. I would make sure that I vet the scanning app because I don't want my information being sent somewhere on the back end. Now, the app that I use to scan documents on the Android phone is simple. It's built into the phone. It's called Google Drive. And if you open up Google Drive and you press the big plus sign when you open it, there is an option to scan. And that will scan your document into a PDF. No extra software necessary. If I'm on iPhone, I'm using two ways to scan in my document. I'm either using the Notes app. You create a new note right above the keyboard. There's a plus sign. You press that plus sign and it will say scan document. Additionally, I like an app called Scannable. It's made by Evernote, which is a reputable company, and I can scan documents that way. But otherwise, I would just be very careful with how you send these to him, how you store these on your phone, and how they're getting out there. Because the danger of sensitive information is that once it's scanned and put in an email, it can be forwarded to thousands or millions of people at once. That's the danger. So you just have to be aware of the process and what you're doing. I do it all the time to make you feel better. I do it all the time. So, but I am very, very cautious about the process I'm using and exactly what I'm doing when it comes to personal information.
So what about the fax? Because I was going to fax and I went to my local church and because I've done volunteers, so they know me, but they were saying that those faxes are connected to, you know, they send faxes to other families in the parish and all that. So that might not be safe either.
Yeah, I would actually think the fax machine is less safe, to be honest.
Oh, and now so...
Because I'll tell you why. The last time I faxed something at my work, this was many years ago, I sent the fax and some fax machines store a copy of what you fax. And so I'll never forget, I came back to the fax machine like to pick up something else. It was also like a printer. And I saw a copy of what I faxed printed out on the fax machine. And I was like, oh my gosh. So
yes,
I actually think your phone is a better bet than the fax machine.
Because right.
The fax machine is a public machine that you don't control. Phone, at least you control.
Right. Okay. So now, is there anywhere, like say if I wanted to make a copy, like a Xerox copy, there's still those machines out there, right? Or no?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like a copy machine? Absolutely. You can bring it to a place. Yeah.
And so that would be even safer than like the fax if I just wanted to do it the old school way and mail it to him, right?
Well, I think the phone is safer than mailing, to be honest. Because mailing, you know, there's a lot of points of failure there, you know. Someone steals it, someone takes it out of your mailbox, it doesn't get delivered, gets misdelivered. So I think you're safe. You just have to, again, just be aware. When you put the address in, like the worst thing you can do is put the email address in and it's got one character off and now you just sent your social security number to someone random, right? So again, just be aware of what you're doing. I do it all the time. I sign contracts all the time for these freelance jobs I do. And believe me, it's all through digital. And do I think about it every single time? Of course. But this is the world we live in. You have to be able to ride with the times.
I see. Okay, Rick, you've been quite a gentleman. I have one more important one that's really been a stick on our side here. My daughter locked herself out of her phone. Her phone is a Samsung Galaxy S5. I was wondering. I forgot my password and I'm locked out of it, but I'm also not able to get into my Gmail account anymore. And I'm not sure how or why, because I wrote down my password, but it doesn't work. So I'm not sure what's going on with the Gmail, but also I don't know if there's a way I can get into my Samsung Galaxy S5.
Not without deleting everything off of it. So you're going to have to start it up in safe mode and delete everything. Now, if you had it connected to a Samsung account, you might be able to, but you basically have to just Google Samsung Galaxy S5 safe mode, start it up in safe mode. You're going to have to reformat. It'll say like factory reset, reset the whole thing. You'll have to set it up again. So you're going to lose everything. So I would try to find, do you have your pictures backed up?
No, because it was set up with my email and I don't know what's going on with that either.
Yeah, I would. It sounds like you need to keep some better records of your passwords because it happens all the time. And I hate to hear this, but next time, write down the passwords because a lot of us, we create our passwords in haste, right? And we kind of forget, right? We think we're going to remember them forever, and then all of a sudden, 2 minutes after we create them, we forget them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing that sucks for me is that I wrote down the password for the Gmail account, but I'm not so sure why it shows that there's like no record of that Gmail account or something. I don't know if I tried to contact Google, but that doesn't really work well.
Yeah, there's no good phone number for them. Okay, I got to run to do the show, but search on Google, go to account recovery and see if you can figure it out that way. But otherwise, you know, do the safe mode thing and figure that out, okay? Thanks for calling in, guys. I appreciate it. All right. Have a great day. Bye. Welcome back to The Tech Guy. Rich DeMuro here, hanging out with you, talking technology. Phone lines are open. It's 888-ASK-LEO. 888-ASK-LEO. Got an email from Mari Zambrano. Mari says, I'm looking for a device to track down my father, but he tends to leave long distance. He will get on buses and leave for Los Angeles to San Diego or San Francisco. He has dementia, and it's getting worse. So a tracking device. Sorry to hear about this, Mari, and I know it happens often. I think the best device that's going to help you track your father is something called the GeoBit. So a couple of things. You know, if he uses a cell phone, obviously you can use something like Find My iPhone or on Android. You know, you can do your Find My Device on that as well. But I'm not sure if he's carrying a phone. So this GeoBit is might be a little bit better because you clip it to something and it uses GPS. So a lot of people think of something like a Tile tracker to track things. Well, Tile only works when there is an app nearby to help you locate that Tile. It doesn't have cellular built in, so it can't actually report its location by itself. It needs a phone nearby, anyone's phone with the app installed, to report where that is. So that really wouldn't work in this situation. But the GeoBit, we actually saw this earlier this year at CES, met the guy, the founder, and he kind of came up with it for kids, autistic children, you know, anyone who runs off. This can be good for it. Also can be used for pets as well. So this is a device that is $100, but you have to have, you know, it's kind of like it has a cellular connection built in, right? So you have to pay for that cellular connection. So this is $100 plus $9 a month. So it's an expensive way to track your dad, but I'm sure he's worth it. So, you know, again, you have to just remember that this thing costs money because it is using a cellular plan. Now you can buy it for $100 on a month-to-month plan, or $150 rather, for a month-to-month plan, that will be $9 a month. So no matter what, you're paying $9 a month. So, but I love this thing because it's small, it clips on, the software is really nice, and it works. It does what it says it does. And the battery lasts about a week. So that's the other thing that you have to think about in this situation is how long will the battery last on the device that you're using to track him. So again, check out GeoBit, GIOBIT, works for kids, works for adults, works for pets. It's one of the best implementations I've seen for a, kind of a smart tracker besides Tile. Tile's great, but it's good for things like your keys, things that aren't very important. I mean, they're important, but it's, you know, it doesn't always find you exactly. This, something like this will get you a very fast location. Jose is in Modesto. Jose, welcome.
Hi, Rich. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. I have I want your opinion, your point of view on a Motorola G7 on lock. I'm looking into buying one, and so I wanted to your opinion about it.
I love it.
Cool, okay.
It's a great device. So are you buying this from Amazon? How are you buying this?
I'm thinking about going Best Buy.
Okay, how much are they selling it for at Best Buy? Do you know?
Around $300 range.
Okay. Yeah, $300. So that's basically the price of the device. They also sell this on Amazon unlocked as well. So the Moto G7 is a phone that gets a lot of good reviews. I'm not the only person that likes this device. So what I like about it is it's unlocked, which means it works on pretty much all the major carriers that you can want it to work on. Let's see. It's got it's got the latest version of Android, which is nice. It's got good storage, 64 gig standard. It's got a decent processor. It's got a nice big battery. It's got a nice big screen. And the cameras are not going to be the best cameras in the world, but they're going to be a pretty decent camera. So overall, when you look at this device compared for $300, you're getting a really nice, well-rounded device for that price. So what's the most important aspect of this to you, Jose?
Well, the processing power and everything, and somewhat the screen size.
Yeah, the screen size is nice. So this is the thing. We live in a world of $1,000 phones, and it's, you know, you think that a phone has to cost $1,000. A phone does not have to cost $1,000. It depends what you want out of that phone. Moto G7, you're not seeing advertisements and billboards for it all over America, right? So don't forget, a lot of that marketing cost goes into the cost of the iPhone and the Samsung devices. So something like a Moto G7, Motorola has a history of doing a really nice job with Android. They were among the first. Remember the Moto Droids? They were like the first with a mainstream Android device as well. And they've been doing a good job. And the software on these things is really nice. They don't have a lot of bloatware on there, so it doesn't slow you down. And this will work on all the major carriers as well. So which carrier are you going to go on with this one?
T-Mobile.
T-Mobile, yeah. So it will work. So I would look at that. G7's really nice. I think you're going to be fine with that. The other phone I'd look at if you want to spend a little bit more is a OnePlus. So very similar kind of idea to this. It's going to be a little bit more, though. It's probably going to be closer to $500, $600. That's double the price. But I think you're going to be just fine with the G7. I'm a fan of the Motorola, what they're doing. I think the biggest downside of this device will probably be the camera. It's going to be just fine in bright light. I think the only time you'll notice a problem is when you're getting motion or when you're taking pictures in any sort of low light situation. But look, you understand this phone is $300. It's a great all-around value.
Oh, yes, yes, absolutely. And, yeah, one of the things I kind of been loving, like, the Moto's cell phones unlock is that it has really, like, minimal bloatware and everything.
Yes, the minimum bloatware is the best because a lot of times when you get these cheap phones or these less expensive phones from something like a Metro PCS or any of these budget carriers, they are just loaded with bloatware. So I think that you'll be doing pretty well with this device because you just don't have all that bloatware on there. So good question, Jose, and enjoy the new phone. I like what Motorola is doing. Again, not necessarily a premium headset or handset, but this is a very nice device for the price. Wayne is in Decatur, Georgia. Wayne, you're on with Rich.
Yeah, Rich, how you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you? How are things out there in Georgia?
Fine. We just got through a storm, and now the sun's back out, and I'm liking it.
All right. I like the sound of that. What's on your mind?
Well, I got an email from somebody that was I was trying to compare my taxes with my neighbors, and I got a realtor that sent me an email from houses in my neighborhood to see about the taxes and comparison because, you know, that equalization thing.
Okay.
And so I went to get it, and I have to pull up the email, which I did, and then I have to click on to open the attachment.
Mm-hmm.
And then I couldn't print that.
So what phone are you using to do this?
Not a phone, just a regular computer.
Oh, just a regular computer. So when you open up the attachment, what format is it in?
I knew you was going to ask me that. I don't know.
is it a PDF? So it depends what...
I believe it was a PDF,
okay.
Yeah.
So if it's a PDF, and why wouldn't it print? There was just no option for printing?
just wouldn't do it. And didn't know who to ask, so I thought of you when I heard your show. I thought maybe the realtor had some kind of rights to that. It didn't want to be, you know, I couldn't print it.
I don't think so. I don't think that's the case. All right, so what I would do is, so what's happening is it's probably opening up the file directly when you download it. Like, it's probably opening it up if you, so I would download it and then right click the file and see what options you have for opening that file. And I think if you can find your standard kind of PDF reader, open it up in there. It might be opened in the browser at this point, and you want to open it up outside the browser and then go ahead and print it that way. I think it's going to print though. You're listening to The Tech Guy, Rich DeMuro, filling in for Leo Laporte. We'll take some of your calls after this in the last segment, 8888 Ask Leo. More of The Tech Guy right after this. Don is in Victor, Montana.
Hello, Rick. That's right. Hello,
hey.
Rich.
Hey, Don. How are you?
I'm fine. We're planning on taking a cruise in the Baltic in June, and I was looking about phone services. I've got a Galaxy S9 Plus that's an open phone. We're currently on Verizon, and that doesn't have very good overseas service, and a lot of these multi-use cards that you can buy over in Europe seem like they're sketchy. The reports on them aren't good, so I was thinking about signing up with a temporary account with Google Fi, because it supposedly will take care of 200 countries, and the rates are reasonably cheap, and I think it's an open-ended thing where you don't have any kind of a contract. What's your advice?
What kind of phone do you have?
Galaxy S9 Plus.
And does it work with Google Fi?
It's compatible. It isn't one that's geared in like the Pixel phones are, but it's compatible.
All right. Well, I think here's my thought. I've been overseas a lot, and I've used my phone in a lot of different places, and I've done it all the different ways. So I used to buy the SIM card in the place I got to, and I think that's the best way to do it. What countries are you visiting? Is it multiple or just one?
Yeah, that's the problem. We've got about 8 different countries we're going through, and so you'd have at least several different SIM cards. Some are on the European exchange. Some are in the independent exchange in Sweden, Denmark, yeah. Norway, Russia.
Well, it sounds like you've done your homework. So I think, you know, there's a couple ways to do this. Number one is to buy the SIM card that works in those places when you get on the ground there. Now, the trick there is that it's kind of a pain. You got to go into a store. Every country is different, you know, when it comes to how you can use your phone. And I remember I was in Spain. They wanted like specific, like a driver's license and all this stuff. Like other countries, they don't care. They sell them to you like a pack of gum, right? And you just pop it into your phone. So that's the number one thing, is every country is slightly different. The secondary way is to get one of those hotspots. You can get a mobile hotspot. You can rent one. But I find that those companies are kind of going out of business because it's cheaper just to use your own phone. The third, now you said that Verizon's not very good overseas. What do you mean by that? Because I do the thing where I pay the $10 a day when I use my phone. Now, if you're going for a lot of days, that can get expensive. But if you do that plan, the passport plan, your phone kind of works the same way it does here in the U.S. So is that what you're talking about, just the price?
Well, the price, and we're on a secondary carrier that uses Verizon. I'm not even sure they would transfer.
Okay, that's right. And that actually goes to my older conversation about these secondary carriers, that a lot of times you don't get the international benefits that you get. Okay,
right.
So I think your plan to do Google Fi is probably your best bet, if you don't mind. Now, the downside to that is it's going to be kind of annoying because your phone number is going to be different for your whole trip. So for texting and all that stuff, it's going to be a different number. So if you're okay with that, I think the Fi thing is really great.
Yeah. Well, I don't use that much, but we wanted to keep in contact with family. And from the sound of things, we could almost send data back, like download our pictures periodically.
Oh, yeah. You'll be fine. I mean, the Google Fi, it works pretty much the same. I can't remember if they limit the speed overseas of what you can do. It might be a limited speed compared to at home, but I'm looking at the it looks like that. No, you get high speed data, so it's $10 per gig. So I think you're going to be good with that. I think that's actually a pretty good plan, as long as you don't mind having a different phone. I personally don't like having a different phone number when I travel overseas, because overseas is complicated enough, and then you're trying to get people to, like, you know, text you to a different number. But if you're okay with that, I think you're going to be just fine with Google Fi. You sign up, it's very inexpensive, you pay as you go, and again, your phone's going to work in all these countries seamlessly.
Yeah, it's open-ended. There isn't any minimum 90 days or anything. You can just get on it and get off of it again, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Put our old phone number back in when I get home.
Yeah, exactly. So I say go with that. And when's this trip planned? Sounds like quite the trip.
Mid-June to later June, yeah.
All right. And I think it's going to be fun. The other thing you can look into, I would just do a comparison. A lot of people like T-Mobile because they have international roaming included in a lot of their plans. I would maybe just kind of do a little comparison and see. But I think the Fi is going to be fine. If your phone is compatible with the Fi, I think that Google Fi is going to be just fine with it. I'm looking at the compatible phones. As long as your phone works with it, I'm not seeing your phone on their website. Yeah. So you need to double, triple,
no,
confirm.
I saw that their Galaxy S9 Plus is compatible. It doesn't have all the benefits of switching automatically and filtering your...
The two networks.
Call.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Don. I think you're going to do just fine with that. So enjoy the trip.
Thanks, Rick.
All right. Thanks for giving me a call today. Do appreciate it. All right. Phone lines are open at 888-ASK-LEO, 888-ASK-LEO. Did you know that you can now lease a Tesla? This is a new feature, or I should say a Tesla 3, Model 3, where I live in Southern California. Very popular car. Oh, my gosh. You see them all over. I remember, it's funny because the Model 3 was this car that was sort of elusive. You know, everyone put these deposits down for it, and nobody got it, and everyone complained for so long. And now, it's just they're everywhere, and you can get one pretty quickly. Last time I checked on the website, it was just a couple weeks wait. But now Tesla has announced you can lease the Model 3 for a small down payment and, quote, competitive monthly payments. You can choose any Model 3 variant and select an annual mileage option of 10,000, 12,000, or 15,000 miles. Now, here's the thing that's a little bit different between the Tesla and other cars that you lease is the Tesla does not let you purchase it at the end. So I know some people buy their leases out. I don't know if that's financially the best thing to do because you're kind of paying a lot for that, I think. But you don't get the option to buy it at the end because Tesla, this is why I love Tesla, because with full autonomy coming in a future over-the-air software update, we plan to use these vehicles in the Tesla ride-hailing network. Customers can visit tesla.com/3 now to lease a Tesla. So I love how they just throw that in there. So by the way, we're going to use these cars in our future automated Tesla ride-hailing network. So when the full autonomy comes out, and that means that your car can drive itself from your driveway to your work without you basically doing anything except programming in the, you know, where you want to go. That's what they're going to do with these cars. So they're letting you lease it. I did the little calculator online, and it's not cheap. I mean, I think it came out to $500-$600 a month to lease this car. So they also got rid of the standard, like, cheapest entry level. Remember that whole thing about the $35,000 car? So the Model 3, that's gone. So now they've got the autopilot option included. So it's a little confusing here. All Tesla vehicles now come with autopilot bundled as a standard feature for less than the prior cost of the feature. For example, Model 3 Standard Plus used to cost $37,500 plus $3,000 for the autopilot. It now costs $39,500 with autopilot included. So you're basically saving $1,000 now, but they're not selling the old model for that $35,000. So a lot of people saying, oh, there's no more standard. So given the popularity of Standard Plus relative to the standard, there's no more standard. Tesla, tough to keep up with everything that's going on there, huh? But a cool car. I love seeing those things on the road. Can you believe it? That's the end of the show. It has been such a blast to fill in for Leo this weekend. Thank you so much, Leo, for letting me do this. Keep in touch with me. I'll see you on KTLA, other TV stations, or on Instagram, Rich on Tech. My book, 101 Handy Tech Tips for the iPhone. You can find it on Amazon. Get it for the iPhone person in your life. Thanks for making time in your weekend to listen to this show and to call in. If you want what we talked about here, you can go to techguylabs.com. And thanks to everyone here for making my guest hosting possible. Robin, Colleen, Damian, Heather on the phones, John, Burke, Alex, Lisa, and of course, Leo. I'm Rich DeMiro. Have a great day.
Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.